Hey, everybody, welcome back to Dustin's Vinyl. I hope you guys are having an amazing time in your quarantine or almost out of quarantine, whatever it is you're doing in your life. And hopefully music is a part of that. I've had a lot of fun this week. I got to go to a couple of record stores and just kind of sift through the records while I'm hand sanitizing as I sift, which is always a different experience. This is the show, most of you know, where we pull vinyl, we talk about it. This is the Upgrade Show. I have a co-host and some featured records and all kinds of fun stuff. So we're going to get started. I'm going to do my random pull, the old, what is he grabbing? Kind of look, but not look, you know what I mean? So we got here, oh, look at this. Oh, this is B.B. King in London. This is the second time I've talked about B.B. King, and I can never talk about B.B. King enough. This is an amazing album. This is actually not a live album. This is a studio album in London that B.B. King recorded, I believe it was 71. It is a great album. It has a lot of U.S. Session musicians and a lot of British session musicians. And if you don't know what a session musician is, pretty much every album that you've ever listened to, there's probably a couple guys you've never heard of that are in the studio making it sound better. And there's something great about this album that it was in London. Ringo Starr is actually on it from the Beatles, of course. And it's got a lot of just really cool people on here. It's got Paul Butler and Gary Wright. Very cool guys. Got a lot of British guitarists that you never heard of that you should check this out. It's kind of one of those things. What's great about session musicians is, you know, it's a lot of improv. It's a lot of just kind of seeing what happens in the studio. I mean, there's a lot of great songs that, you know, we have now that you wouldn't even realize that somebody, you know, just came in. Jack and Diane is a great example of a song that a session musician, whose name is Kenny Aronoff, I think. And he's just a, you know, it was just during the, you know, they were just like, they wanted a drum solo and he just kind of went off and did his thing. And that is the greatest part of that song. And so that's what happens with a lot of, you know, these great musicians and, you know, guys like Glenn Campbell started out as a guy that was just kind of, you know, recording guitar and stuff and for other people's records. So B.B. King is great. He's the king of blues. Check out this album. You won't be sorry. It's got a lot of really cool stuff on it. I mean, I can listen to B.B. King, you know, every day if I could. I just love the sound of his guitar and just it's got good stuff. Blues is good for the soul, you know what I mean? All right. Good old woman. Oh, I updated a few of those. All right, everybody, I'm going to bring in your co-host, the featured co-host of Dustin's Vinyl, a good friend of mine who had a lot of fun last week. Please give it up for Mr. Jeffrey Paul in the studio.
Hey.
Up, you know what?
I love session musicians. There's a great documentary called The Wrecking Crew. Yeah, there are these musicians that played in Los Angeles, and they played like in the 60s on 60s and 70s on everybody's album. And they're really featured a lot on like a lot of like the Beach Boy albums. They all play on Pet Sounds, which is one of the most revolutionary albums ever made. You know, without Pet Sounds, you don't have a lot of the creative Beatles stuff.
Hired Gun is also another one. It's on Netflix now. It's really good.
What is it?
Hired Gun.
Hired Gun, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And Kenny Aronoff, you're right, is a monster drummer. He really is
out of nowhere. He's on that song, and it's just without that solo. I mean, that's the beat of my childhood.
Yeah, in Jack and Diane, it's that little drum riff that breaks up the song.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, but, really good stuff. But we're going to talk about an album today. Yes, we are. And if we went last week and we talked about a debut album, then this week I'd like to talk about a follow-up album, a sophomore album, if you will.
Okay.
And that album is Pinkerton by Weezer. And it has a very interesting story. I think as a comic and the kind of comic that I know that you are, I think it's something that you would be able to feel. Because this album is an extremely gut-wrenching personal album of the singer-songwriter Rivers Cuomo, who writes all the songs for Weezer. But you can't talk about the first, you know, the second album, Pinkerton, without first going back to a little history with the first album. You know, so Weezer comes out with their first album in 1994, and it's just known as the Blue Album. You want to know why it's called the Blue Album?
Tell us.
Because the cover is blue. Okay.
I told you about these questions. I know these trick questions you like to throw at me.
Yes. Listen, they didn't have a lot of creativity.
Talked about that. The first album.
So the first album is called the Blue Album because it's a blue album. But it spawned some huge hits in the 90s. The Sweater Song, Say It Ain't So, which was tremendous on college radio. And alternative radio. And then, yeah, right, the monster hit, Buddy Holly, which was, you know, with a tremendous all-time video directed by Spike Jonze. You know, they're in a Happy Days episode. Commercial, tremendous. The album itself goes double platinum. So now they go from obscurity to major rock stars. And this is what Pinkerton is about. It's about Rivers Cuomo writing about his life for a two-year period between 1994 and 1996 after he became famous. And he, you know, the quote that he said was he wanted to experiment with his black, his dark side. It, you know, it's a very black, dark album. It's personal, like I said. And when I went back and I spent the week just like listening to this, I'm really, you know, I really haven't heard it in a long time, but spent like this whole week dissecting it. And when you do, there are three major themes of the album. There's his disillusionment of being a rock star, the rock star life. You know, it's the touring, the faceless fans, the motel rooms, hotel rooms, the boredom of the whole thing after you've done it. His self-imposed celibacy. He didn't have sex for 2 years. Chose on his own.
I went down that road. I don't recommend it.
And then he talks about in the album a leg surgery that he had. He was born with one leg being shorter than the other, and during this time he gets this very, very painful surgery, and so, you know, he goes through that. So now he's going to incorporate all those things that are going on in his life in that 2 years into this album. Pinkerton itself was supposed to be a rock opera called Songs from the Black Hole. And it's kind of like, you know, think about the emergence of something like a rock and Songs from the, the Black Hole. He kind of saw it as a modern day Madame Butterfly, which is funny. You know, modern day Madame Butterfly with a little splash of the Pixies in there, which Weezer later
splash? On goes forward. Did you say splash? A little more than a splash, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yes, yeah, I hear that. But Pinkerton itself, the name Pinkerton came from, there's two theories on it. It's either, it was a character in Madame Butterfly for sure. And then other rumor was that during this time, there was a lawsuit because of this and the agency that I guess gave out the, you know, the subpoena was called Pinkerton. So that's maybe where he kind of gets the name. But anyway, he stopped writing the rock opera because in his words, not mine, he said it's so lame.
Yeah.
You know, he just felt it wasn't coming together and scratch it. And they wound up making their sophomore album. So when the album comes out, it is not successful. It is actually a commercial flop. And I think a lot of it has to do with the first single. And that's how we'll break this album down a little bit.
Sure.
So the first single off of Pinkerton was El Scorcho. Mm-hmm. And it's the exact opposite of Buddy Holly. It is not poppy. It is not catchy. It starts off with a weird drum start and a very like sketchy, weird guitar riff. It's a weird choice for a single, okay? But here, this song is the theme of disillusionment. And I just jotted down a couple of songs, lyrics, just to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about. Like one of the lyrics in the song is, how stupid is this? I can't talk about it. I got to sing about it. I got to make a record about it, okay? This is the wrong choice for a single. The second single is one of the better songs on the album. It's called The Good Life. It's a great video. It's fun. This should have been the first single. It's much more catchy. But the theme here is his leg surgery, because listen to like the lyrics. He wrote, broken, beaten down, can't even get up, can't even get around without an old man cane. I fall and hit the ground. The video is a cool video. It's it follows around this pizza delivery girl who's played by emerging comic, Mary Lynn. Is it Rajrub? I don't know. She's been on a bunch of shit, but it's a great, great catchy song. And then there were only three singles from this album, by the way. And the third one was Pink Triangle. And Pink Triangle really goes more into his celibacy theme, where he's looking for love. Now, he does this in a lot of different songs on the album.
Yeah.
He's doing this in Tired of Sex, Why Bother? Really talks about how much, like, he's not looking for sex anymore. I'm the rock star. I've done it all. Now he's looking for love, and he's not gonna have sex with anyone until he finds love. And it's a lot of failed.
And it's
love.
A lesbian, right?
I think exactly.
He falls for a lesbian.
Yeah, yeah. See, you picked that up by Pink Triangle. You're good. You're good, man. Like, don't let anyone tell you anything different, Dustin Chaffin. You're sharp as a marble. You're good. Okay. Yes. So yes, this is, he's talking about failed love. The girl that he's talking about is, he enrolled in Harvard and he grows a beard and he looks completely different. So no one really recognizes him. And Weezer is a big band at the time. Okay. So, and he falls in love, like you said, with a girl who's a lesbian, and he's fantasizing about a life with her. And he writes about it in the song and the lyric. It's so revealing. It's so revealing. He goes, I thought I found the one. We were as good as married in my mind, but married in my mind is no good. Also, at the beginning of that song, he kind of refers back to the leg surgery, which has been holding him back. And he talks, when I'm stable long enough, and stable could be viewed as a double entendre there. It could be stable physically because of the leg surgery, or stable mentally, okay? But he starts now looking for love. Songs cool. I thought were
no. I forgot I was here. first of all, before we break down more songs, I didn't really like Weezer as a band. They were always kind of like I told you last week, I had spent some time out of the country, and a little bit of my early 90s rock was a little skewed because when I got back to the States, I was kind of refining myself musically and trying to, kind of get into stuff that I kind of liked in the past. And so I missed a lot of new music. And when I started comedy, Weezer was always kind of a punchline because it was kind of like it was this nerd rock. And, as you could see, Motorhead here, stuff, whatever. I like a lot of bands that I can't beat up. And I feel like Weezer was kind of one of those bands that kind of, it just kind of represented a group of people that I didn't like. And so sometimes you associate a band with their fans. And so I felt like they were kind of vegetarian, nerdy types or whatever. And so, I missed a lot of them. And it's one of those bands that I didn't listen to. I had heard a few songs that were popular, Buddy Holly and stuff, and, things that were just kind of on the radio or whatnot. And, but then I, doing the homework, I actually bought the album, Pinkerton. And, one thing that this album's got going for it, it doesn't sound like Weezer. That's what I loved about it. It was a total opposite of Blue. I mean, there was just, like you said, the darkness of this album is really what kind of drawn me to it. And it does have a Pixie sound, a really strong Frank Black kind of edge to it. But I just, I enjoyed top to bottom. I feel it's a really good album. And I also love it when fans don't like something. It always is intriguing to me. And why is that? It's like, why does the band, people got weird about Metallica because they had an orchestra behind them, or Garth Brooks tried that ridiculous thing where he had like his whole thing. And a lot of debut albums didn't make it. Pet Sounds was not, a huge success right away. The Stooges album that came out wasn't a big hit. Fleetwood Mac's Tusk, you know, Ramones, their debut. Like, there's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of times people aren't ready for it. And the only problem I have with this album is this guy seems dark. He seems real. He seems like an artist. He seems like this gritty rock star. But he backed up on this album and said, he apologized for it and said it was the worst thing ever and I shouldn't have released it. And then it was like, and then it becomes this cult success and everybody digs it and becomes a whole new wave of fans that normally wouldn't be drawn to Weezer. They love it. And then he comes back and is like, oh yeah, it's a pretty good album. And so he just, that's the only part that I have a problem with, is that he came back and was like, you know, he was like dismissed artistically. And then kind of once people got into it, then he liked it. And I was like, you know, you got to stand tough and stand tall for your art. And I think that's the only problem I have with this guy. It's a little sketchy that he kind of, you know, apologized for his art, because I think this is a great album. And the fact that it's dark and real, that makes me like it more.
I agree with everything you said. Yeah. Everything you said. And it's interesting that you you talked about the Blue album, and then and the album after Pinkerton was the Green album. Any idea why they called it the Green album?
So people thought it was like the Blue album.
No, because it was a green cover. Okay, yeah. That's the only reason.
But I think, but the marketing branding, I'm sure, was like, hey, this is going to be more like that other one.
100%. That's exactly. Yeah. So this is the album that's in the middle, and it is completely, completely different. Now, I'm so glad that you like this album, because if I had to pair a comedian up with an album, now you know me. I mean, two favorite bands of all time are Iron Maiden and Sabbath. Okay. And that was like the people I hung around with and everything. But as comedians as well, and this is something you always taught me and we talked about, is being vulnerable. And this album is vulnerable.
Yeah, it's politically incorrect, like the way he talks about women. Yeah. Like he's, you know.
Yes, in fact, not only did he apologize after, he apologized before the album came out. You know, he wrote a letter to the people in the Weezer fan club.
Yeah.
And apologizing, like, you may not like this album. This album may be a little misogynist. It may sound, you know, it's coming from a dark place. So he did apologize before anyone even heard the songs. And a song that really stood out to me, there's a couple of them, but the one that really is my favorite song on the album, by the way, is Across the Sea. And Across the Sea, he talks about his desires for this 18-year-old Japanese girl. And it's a real encounter where she was, you know, a fan, and she was asking like typical questions that you would ask a rock star. She said, and he puts it in the lyrics of the songs. He says, you wanted to know all about me, my hobbies, my favorite music. These are the lyrics, okay? Yeah. My birthday. And then he's fantasizing about her.
One thing that's great too is she doesn't know who Green Day is, and he thinks that's so attractive.
Yeah. Right, which is interesting that they mentioned Green Day as well in the song. But yeah, then he's asking her things about, like, I wonder what clothes you wear at school. I wonder how you decorate your room, how you touch yourself.
And he's creep. I love it.
He's a creep. He's a creepy guy. But he also knows that no matter what, they can't be together. Again, failed love. Yeah. Because there's a lot of factors. Her age, his rock star status, his location. And he says it in the song, I curse myself for being across the sea. And even the opening of it, goddamn, this business is really lame. You know, that he can't get this love connection. And then it's followed up by songs like Why Bother? And, like, you know, one of my favorite lyrics in that is, you know, he tells you right out, why should I even, like, try to have a relationship? Why bother? It's going to hurt me. It's going to kill when you desert me. Again, failing love. And then tied to sex has to do with his celibacy, looking for true love. So this is why I love this album so much, is because of the personalness of it. You're right. People hated it when it first came out, voted third worst album of 1996. And then they don't do anything. Weezer doesn't put out the Green album until 2000.
I think Vanilla Ice was in 96. So that's really,
But what happens is now people start to discover this album. And then just like 5 years later, it's voted 16th best album of all time by Rolling Stone.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those albums that, you know, if you like rock and raw in music, you're definitely going to be drawn to it. And I just love the idea of, you know, just taking chances, you know, whenever a band does that. I mean, the Beatles were the king of that. I mean, they did all kinds of weird stuff and they were always kind of experimenting with different sounds and, you know, Eastern music and, you know, the White Album and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I love bands that are willing to take that risk. You know, it's funny. It's, and a lot of times people lump you into categories. And I think that's what happened with this band is they, you know, they came out of the gate as this kind of cute pop college band and, you know, girls loved them and the lyrics were light and everything was, you know, kind of just like in that kind of Urban Outfitters. Yeah. Right. And referencing. And that's, you know, it's funny with me personally, it's like, you know, a lot of times, you know, I will get booked as some sort of country comic. And like a lot of times I'll get booked as like, you know, like they'll have like a country band and then they'll have, you know, they want like a cowboy comedian or something. But then when they hear my comedy, it's definitely more liberal and more raw than they, you know, they want me to get her done, but it's a whole nother thing. You know, it's like they expect me to just be this like country guy. And then it's like, you know, they don't get what they think they're going to get. So I love the idea of that. I would love to see that one, that concert on this first tour where all these little bebopper kids were hanging out waiting for this new Weezer, you know, show. And then it's like these raw, just freaking talking about chicks and, you know, vagina references and like, you know, I don't like this business and just like, you know, all this stuff. And I think I just love the idea of them just going, what's happening? we want Buddy Holly. We want the Fonzie stuff. What is that? So
He's not singing about Mary Tyler Moore in this one.
Yeah.
No. This one he's talking about lesbians that he can't get. Exactly.
Yeah. And just, you know, I like it. And I was talking about the Pixies. I feel it's a heavy influence. I feel Doolittle has a lot to do with this album. I feel like there's a lot of rawness. And I don't mean any sort of copy way, just kind of an inspirational way. Well, I could do that with records all day long, but yeah, I feel like there's and that's why I like it. Cause I love the Pixies. That's one of the, you know, I saw them live and whatever. And so I love the rawness of kind of, you know, the way they play. And I feel there's definitely just, you know, just some great experimental stuff with this. But, yeah, I like, El Scorcho was great. I think that's a great song. I enjoyed that one. You know, I did like Pink Triangle a lot. And then Butterfly was a little softer song and I enjoyed that as well.
I love it. It's a great way to end the album.
Nice acoustic piece. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very pretty. But you know what? I also think that, again, the connection I also make with comedy is like, sometimes if you'll write something, you'll perform it and it doesn't get anywhere. It doesn't, you know, no one, you know, you don't, maybe I don't throw it away. You don't throw it away. You hold on to it because maybe you're not ready to do that bit yet. And then a couple of years later, you bring it back. You're like, oh, now I know what I was thinking. And maybe you find the connection. You know, you find a way to do it. I think that's what audiences did with this album. Like they weren't ready for Pinkerton when it came out. And then when it came out.
Yeah, boom. They never really are. You know what I mean? Was anybody really ready for Elvis? Was anybody really ready for, you know, Chuck Berry? Were they really ready? You know, it's just like, and that's the beauty of music. You know, I mean, there's guys that are kind of, you know, into this kind of stuff and can, you know, latch on when they hear something great. But, you know, I don't think, I always put the audiences below the artist because a lot of times they don't know anything, you know? They don't, right. You know, you see people, they think they know music or they think that, you know, it's like whenever somebody says they don't like a genre of music, I always question that person because I like every single genre of music. You're never going to hear me go, I don't like this. I don't like that. You know, cause I feel in order to like certain kinds of music, you have to like other music. And so you can't like say, I don't like jazz and then love rock and roll. Like it all encompasses itself. You know, it's like
right.
This music, like with opera and things like that. And that's what's cool about him is he's obviously just kind of has this huge knowledge of music and he's like incorporating everything into it. And then the fact that his reference is Madame Butterfly is and things like that is really amazing that he was kind of wanting to do kind of an operatic thing. Because he has a strong knowledge of music. He's not just some kind of, you know, guy that's just like likes, you know, Green Day, obviously, and then like I'm just gonna sound like this band. Like, you know, it's very complex.
It is. And it's crazy that he wanted to do that for his second album, like the second album, because a lot of times, you know, between the pressure from the record company is like, you know, the Blue Album was great. We want the Blue Album Part Two, just like a continuation. And yeah. He was like, man, it is not going to be a continuation. There's so much more to me. And then again, I love the vulnerability, because I don't sometimes think I'm vulnerable enough. So I kind of respect that in other artists, and that he's vulnerable. And at one point he even starts to doubt himself when Pinkerton tanks. He goes on record. He was in an interview that I heard, and he doubted himself as a songwriter. He was like, the Blue Album is a fluke. It's all about the video. Spike Jonze should get all the credit, not me. Mm. And then
it was a great video.
It takes years later for him to kind of realize, hey, you know, he's got the chops. He's a great songwriter. The audience, like, and like you said, the audience wasn't ready. They didn't catch up until 5 years later.
Yeah, they're never ready. But I think that's did Adam want to come in? He enjoyed Pinkerton as well, right?
Adam. Yeah. We were talking before. He has a
bring Adam in. Bring yourself in, Adam. Tell us a little bit about Pinkerton.
There we go.
Okay.
So I got this Pinkerton shirt right here. This was from the.
Nice.
From the Memories tour, which was back in 2010. So I saw them over at
Roseland. Oh, so you did see them live, and you saw this album. Where? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this was, they were basically touring only two albums at the time, if I remember. I think it was just the Blue Album and Pinkerton. So I went the second night, and...
what year was it?
2010.
In 2010, right?
2010. So yeah, over at Roseland.
The Green Album was already out at that time.
Yeah, yeah. The Green Album, I think, was, what was it, 2001?
2002.
But, yeah, so they performed, it was two sets. The first set was just all greatest hits, and then they went right into Pinkerton.
Wow.
Nice.
That is really cool.
And so this, I'm sure this audience was enjoying everything, like it wasn't some,
right,
like, just
right.
Blue audience. Yeah, okay.
But I was the same way back in when this came out. I was a big Blue Album fan, and
okay.
I didn't get Pinkerton at first. I was also, I think it was my freshman year of college when it came out.
Okay.
And I was into more top 40 stuff. So Pinkerton really didn't, you know, it took a few years before I really got into it.
Yeah, I think an album like this, you kind of got to go through some shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
there's certain music where you go through some shit, you appreciate it more, you know, struggle and heartache and, you know, girls and all that crazy stuff. And it's like, it affects you differently once you've lived a life. Like, this is an album, you know, you need to live a little before you can appreciate it.
Yep.
And it also draws you into a world that a lot of people aren't privy to. Like, he went from being a nobody to becoming this rock star that girls wanted, and like he lived it and then just got bored of it really quick because he has a lot more depth.
Yeah, I think I respect that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really feel sorry for him. I mean, that's a pretty good thing to be struggling with.
Come on, doesn't you have to feel better? Come on, he had girls banging down his door. Come on, he had money. How can you got to feel bad for him? Chicks throwing themselves at you.
Exactly.
How do you not feel bad for that?
Yeah, but you know, it is. You know, I have some famous friends and things, and it is interesting where it's like you think you want that. You know, it's like I have a friend who's in a whole bunch of movies and stuff, and you know, and the fame part of it. He would trade for anything. Like, it's the money's nice and the work is nice, but it's like when you're young and you get it quick, and you know, or even if it did take you a while, it's like, it's still something that, you know, it's a lot to take in. And I think a lot of these guys, it's like, you know, they just kind of would rather just be, you know, kind of at the bar playing in the back and, you know, not having this life that is, cause there's so many expectations when you get to a certain level of, like, you know, top 40 and stuff. You know, there's like five lawyers involved and there's like a couple of different labels and things. Like, there's so much going on where it's like becomes more than just playing the music. So I think it kind of fucks a lot of people up. And that's why a lot of them go to drugs. A lot of them just check out and have like all these emotional problems and addiction problems because they're just not ready for it. They just want to play the music, but there's way more than just playing the music. There's a whole nother life. And you know, Jeff, you've been on the road with these guys. You know how it is. They're so demanding and they got like two assistants and this and that. It's just, you know, it's just, I think when that just comes at you right away, you know, you're not ready.
That's a great point that you said that too, because, Adam, being a Weezer fan, this was the last album that he did with original bassist Matt Sharp. He winds up leaving after this because
he left because of this album, right? Or just
Wow. There's a lot of things going. I mean, they didn't like, hey, fuck you, hey, you know, it wasn't that. It was what direction is the band going in? What are we doing over here? And he was pulled from different sides. And it's like, hey, before it becomes like a major issue personally with us, best thing for me is to leave it. He started another band. I forgot what it was called. They had kind of like a minor success. And I forgot what it was called. But yeah, I saw Weezer on their debut tour.
Oh, wow.
They were the support act for, do you guys remember a band called Live?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great band.
I Alone. Remember that? Yeah. So they were the opening act for them.
Wow. And I love that.
That was a great.
I love seeing opening acts, you know, and then they just kind of go on to success. That's so cool. I saw Living Color open up for Rolling Stones. That was really cool.
It worked that tour.
Yeah, that was super nice tour.
That was great.
And it's just always cool. You get, you know, just I had a friend of mine. She opened up for Bob Seger and stuff. And it's like, it's just cool when, you know, you kind of, sometimes I like the opening band more than the popular band that I am paid to see. Like, yep. You'd be surprised because sometimes you're just like, oh, I hadn't heard that before. Meanwhile, who you're paying to see, you've heard every single song. So it's just kind of a nice, refreshing thing. I always love new music like that. So that's so cool.
I did that once. I went to go see Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And I didn't even stay for the whole thing because I love the opening band. It was a Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I remember
Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother. Yeah.
It was really good. And you're like, you're disappointed because they're only doing like a half hour set, and then Crosby, Stills, and Nash go up there and they're droning on. And you're like, holy shit, it's an hour and they still got like more time to do. Oh my god.
So you guys educate me on Weezer. So if you had to live or die by three Weezer songs, Jeff, you go first. What would you tell a guy like me that wants to get more into Weezer? Give me three Weezer songs to kind of put in my playlist.
I mean, if it's you, I'm saying check out Hashpipe. It's a great song with a really heavy riff.
And that's off of Blue or Green?
No, that is
Green album.
Off of the Green album. I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go with Hashpipe. The polar opposite of that song on the Green album, which is Island in the Sun.
Yep.
Still love that song. And then, man, you know what? They do the best covers. Them and like maybe Hailstorm are two bands that do great, great covers. And they're, they do, it's almost like, like their version of Africa is Great and Everybody Wants to Rule the World. They did that on Kimmel with the guys from Tears for Fears. So that's a really good one. And I've almost everything off of Pinkerton. I mean, again, you know, Across the Sea is my favorite song off that album.
What about you, Adam?
I'd go with, let me see, I'm just looking at some of the stuff from Pinkerton right now. But I mean, The Good Life is a fantastic song off of there. I mean, but the whole album is amazing. Island in the Sun is one of my favorites off of the Green album. And Suzanne, which is, I think it was in one of Kevin Smith's films. I always thought that was a great song too. And with the covers, they did a cover of No Scrubs, the TLC song.
Oh, that's okay.
What's
I love that. I love covers. Any band doing a cover, I love this. Well, you know,
if
all
you
that
do, function. Then check out their video of Take on Me.
Oh, they have one. Yeah, no, yeah. I'm definitely gonna kind of get more into the band. I think they're good. But this, I know a lot of it's not going to sound like this. So after, was there an album after the Green album?
There was. That's the one with Pork and Beans on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Did they lean back towards this vibe or they just kind of stayed
They got heavier.
They got heavier.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Now, another reason why they had to go with a different way of playing this album is because of the leg surgery, and everything had to be played like on the lower frets of the guitar because he physically couldn't go up on the guitar. So everything had to be played lower. So that's why.
How short was his leg?
It was considerably a couple of inches shorter. Wow. So I think they had to like break his hip and his tibia. Like it was a very painful surgery. And Jesus. He talks about it in the lyrics of the song, how he scarred up, you know. He was a mess.
I love the idea that, like, you know, this kid's in junior high thinking he'll never get laid because he's got this, you know, gimp foot. And then he becomes this amazing rock star. And then it's like girls, you know, that's a beautiful story right there. Cause you know, it was tough for him, I'm sure, when he was young. And then just to kind of like bust out and be this huge rock star. I think that's great.
Yeah, well, you would have beat him up. So
I probably would beat him up.
And you would have like, you're annoying.
You know what I mean? There's this thing. I had a hard time with the Pixies at first. Like there's certain bands where you're just like kind of nerdy. I'm not like REM even when I was younger. Like there's just bands. I'm just like, you know, it doesn't appeal to me yet. And it takes a while. And then the more I listen to the music, the more I get into the band. But you know, it's like we're kids. We like Clash. So it's like when U2 came out, we felt like they weren't as hard. So we were like, you know, it's like you just kind of, but you find your way into these bands the more you listen to the music. But Weezer was a punchline. I think I used it the other night. I was in Brooklyn. I was like, you guys look like a Weezer crowd. And everybody still laughed in like, you know, 220.
So identifiable because of the glasses.
And, well, it just feels, it's very like Brooklyn-esque to me. Very kind of Urban Outfitters. Like it just has this, this, you know, this feel to it. And I remember, I think Jean Garofalo dated one of the guys or something. So it was like, it was kind of this band that was always kind of circulating around, but I never got into them. I just felt like I wouldn't be into them. And so I'm glad we had this episode because I was able to actually bought the album. That's how cool I am. I was like, I'll even buy an album just to see if I like it, you know? And I'm glad I did because it's really, it's a good album. Very good.
That's another thing. I love the cover art on it, but I don't know if it's grabbing anyone's attention.
No, it's what is it? Japanese something? What's it going? It looks like it's some Japanese print. Some like, you got the t-shirt. What is that? Yeah. Like a little dude in the snow. Rice Paddies in the snow. What's happening here?
it's not like an Iron Maiden album cover where you got Eddie and he's taking on like, you know, an army or something, you know, and he with lasers.
Look at this. Yeah. Just like this. It's not like how would you not buy this album?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what like, you're getting. Look how cool is that?
Right. Yeah. You know, you're not getting Butterfly on that album.
But even the Beatles had great, you know, this like, you know, art that captured kind of who they were and stuff and just iconic stuff. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's sometimes it's like, and it fits with this album because I felt like that first album was very catchy, you know, the way it looked, even with the blue cover and everybody's on with the bright colored shirts and the glasses and all that, you know, it spoke to that kind of audience that would buy that album. And so I think that's, you know, but with this is like, yeah, it's like, it's weird. Just like the album itself, it's kind of off and dark. And so is the album. So is the art, you know, in the back, you got some ghost, you know, China lady. Can you say that? China lady? Concubine, some ghost concubine. So yeah, it goes with the theme. It's on brand with this album, you know what I mean? So
it does.
Obviously they didn't care. They weren't trying to do a catchy album. Like they wanted something different.
This is a Weezer shirt.
It is.
Yeah, this is from the last
time. I question you being into Weezer, Jeff.
You didn't see that one coming.
But I respect it. But I respect it. When you like Adam is like, you know, he's of that era. But that's what I like about you, because you do kind of like get into bands, you know, younger bands and stuff. And I think that's, I think it's, you know, that's important. That's how you evolve musically, is kind of, you know, get into this. And I try to do that sometimes. Yeah. You know, just get into a band that maybe is, you know, you're more of a Van Halen guy, but you're like, hey, this is cool. And then you give it a, how did you, you saw him live. So you saw him open for
I saw them open for, I love live.
So that's how you got into them. Okay. They opened for live. Gotcha.
And then, you know, then after I saw them live, I went out and bought the album and I just loved them. I follow them ever since.
That's a great,
For me, it's like what you just said before is like, you know, my favorite bands are metal bands, but I mean, as long as it's good, I'll listen to anything. I mean, I can listen to the most pop songs, Motown. I love country, you know, I mean, anything, as long as it's good. I mean, I sat in the third row, for George Strait. I saw him on his last tour. I mean, I love George Strait. My wife is a huge George Strait fan. So we'll listen, as long as it's good music, we'll check out anybody. We're not going to sit there and say, no, if it's not this type of music, we're not going. That's not what music's about.
Yeah, well, you know, but that's the thing about friends and people and artists. And it takes, you know, somebody recommends, like the fact that I was doing this show, I would have never heard this album. It just would not be something that I would lock in and give a chance to, unless I'd read an article or something, or somehow somebody brought them up, you know, as a band. I just totally wrote them off. I was like, this cheesy ass band, I'm not into it. This like emo rock bullshit, you know, tight jeans, glasses, rock. Dustin, I'm not into it. I want tattooed leather, you know? So it's like, yeah, it's, you know, just something that I just wouldn't have gotten into. So I'm glad I did. It's a very good album.
Wait till next week's album.
Oh, next week's album? Okay. Well, hopefully. Okay. Are you going to surprise me? Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. We'll
you got to tell me week. so I can prepare for the segment. So
we're not going to reveal
that's how
it
this
now.
Works. We're trying to do a real show here, Jeff.
I'll call you off
see how we prepared it. And how, like, you know, otherwise, if you hadn't told me it was this, I'd be like, what? What's this album? I don't know what this is.
Wait, you mean you don't just happen to have an album of Skritti Politti's third album lying around?
Actually, that I do have.
No, <you don't. laughs> nope.
Give me a second. Politti to find
has
it.
A third album. Skritti Politti.
Skritti Politti.
And one song.
Terrence Trindarby.
Wishing well.
Very cool. All right. So, cool. Are we going to do the albums coming out, or are we wrapping up? What's going on?
You know, there's really not a lot coming out right now because where are people buying? But what I will do is I'd like to just kind of give like a shout out to a band that was on Who's Your Band. They're a new band called Sons of Silver. And it's made up of members of Pearl Jam and Candlebox. And, you know, besides, they're great guys, but their music is really, really cool. They have an EP out called Doomsday Noises, and they're waiting to release, you know, their follow-up. So hopefully that should be coming out soon. Everyone's hoping to tour sometime in 2021.
Aren't we all?
Yes.
This is a band that has a new album coming out on the 30th of this month. I think if you like Weezer, you might like The Eels. I don't know if anybody's into The Eels. Yeah, I feel like they're kind of a similar kind of rock sound or whatever. They're a cool band, very talented. And Public Enemy has about album coming out, I believe. I don't know if that's a reissue. I should probably
that's supposed to be coming out.
It's a new album, right? It's a new album? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's November 8th. That's coming out. And then November 13th, Johnny Cash with the Royal Philharmonic, which Johnny with a backing orchestra would, I'm sure that's pretty amazing. So
be interesting.
Check that out for sure.
All right. Good stuff, records. Man.
All right. Cool, man.
Well, thanks for letting me sprout
I'll
on
I'll
about
play us out with some Pinkerton.
How yes.
Good stuff. All right. But that's B.B. King. Cool, man. Well, thanks for joining us, Adam. I figured, you know, it's like you knew more about Weezer than I did. So,
the amazing thing about Weezer is they've managed to stay relevant. I mean, how many 90s bands have faded away and Weezer is still going? Which, you know, mostly it seems like they come up with something new every 3 or 4 years. I mean, they had their covers album that came out that really kind of boosted them again. And
yeah, I'm going to check that out. It's a whole covers album.
Covers album.
Yeah.
It's great. You know what they do, Adam? They reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? And I respect that, you know, and I respect you guys telling me and talking to me and just, you know, and that's why I wanted to do this show. This show is, you know, it's also about me discovering music. And I think that's, and then people that are listening in, maybe they get to discover music and, you know, that kind of thing. So
Yeah. I mean, they're still playing arena shows, and they're one of the most recent tours, the Pixies open for them.
Oh, Pixies absolutely. Open for them.
Yeah.
Ironic. Yeah. That's so weird. Yeah. I think it should be the other way around, but I'm a Pixie right. purist, but I saw them.
Also.
This is a funny story. So when I first got to New York, my father was like, okay, you can go to any show you want. We can go to Cats. We can go to, you know, whatever music, CBGBs. And the Pixies were playing at the Roxy. And I remember my father was upstairs with a Crown and Coke, just looking over the balcony while I was in the mosh pit, just like my Southern dad was like, well, I ain't getting down there, boy. And he's just drinking, shooting Crowns back while I'm just moshing to the Doolittle's album. So cool, man. This was a great show. Keep buying vinyl. Keep supporting music. Great job today, Jeff. Very good reporting.
Thank you, sir.
The awkwardness, it's what I like. Keeps it fun.
I'm wearing the Rivers Cuomo's glasses. I'm changing.
We gotta get your studio fixed up, man. I'm gonna get your studio. Like, you gotta get something going on in the background, Jeff.
Next
gotta
time,
keep it fun. Keep it fun, different. Man.
Take care, everybody.
All right, everybody. Bye-bye.